everybody. Welcome to our podcast, Cow Dust and Cattle Country. This is your host, Laura.
And this is Carolyn with Ranchers Have Rights.
We had a pretty busy week, I think. Actually, the last 2 weeks have been busy and we haven't quite gotten around to doing a podcast. So we thought we'd get together and just talk to y'all about what we have in the works that we'll be coming out with pretty soon.
We had some good things go on, and then my family had a tragedy that is going to be okay. Kind of a surprise accident. Well, what if I just read what I wrote on Facebook today? And maybe that'll explain it all, and then we'll get into what we're planning on doing in the next couple weeks.
I think that's good.
Okay. I have a picture of the Ranch Days, Catron County's largest classroom on agriculture. And that is a neat deal where like 400 to 600 kids show up annually during 2 days to learn about agriculture. And it's at the McKean's Ranch. Margie McKean puts it on and Hubie tolerates it. And it's been going on, I think it's 25 years. I'm not sure, but we've come to count on it. I thought I would be back to Ranch Days to do the second day of presentations with our soil and water conservation group, Recharge of the Water Table. We even had a faucet that spit out no water because the water was gone. Darn evasive junipers and their thirsty, eco-unfriendly roots. But I didn't go back the next day, and Howard and Frank carried the torch. Thank you, another thank you. Our little granddaughter was hurt in a tractor accident at a different location. She had to be airlifted, broken bones, maybe internal. Thank God for the miracles that were around her to get her to safety and recovery. We love all who were there. She has a road ahead of her and lots of family and community to help get her through. Thank you all. Thank you, Lord. So now I can somewhat focus. There's a bill proposed that I want to read. And I'm going to stop here because we're going to talk about that later.
So that was a pretty big deal for you guys. And I know that you guys are really grateful. Everybody in the entire country has pulled together to try and help with what you guys have been through and your little grandbaby. And I know that, you know, everybody's helping and everybody's praying, and that's really helped a lot. Everybody underestimates how important it is to pray when things like these happen. But we've been through similar situations, and you really have to have the prayer of your neighborhood to get through them. So I'm really glad for that. And things seem to be stable now. So
this is the first day, or maybe the second day, where I can even focus on something else. So.
I can imagine. Yeah. No, your whole brain just goes straight into support mode and prayer mode for your family. So
that have come out of this is I'm taking the brothers to Little League. I'll tell you what, that is fun. It takes me back to my junior high days where we weren't thinking about the Forest Service or the craziness that's going on in our world. Is just you go to the baseball fields and there's light and there's probably as many people in that field as there are that actually live in my town. We have to drive over an hour to get there. Man, I love it. I'm so glad he's involved in that. So
baseball,
not only
apple
for him,
pie.
But for me as well. Isn't that selfish?
Yeah, okay. No, I think it's great. Baseball, just good old Americana.
Right. And there's team camaraderie and just watching him shake hands with the kids and then giving high fives. Well, our little cowboys, they shake hands with their grown-ups. And so he's doing that with the kids. And that is fun to watch.
Oh, I always wished we could do things like that, too, for our kids. But we're a little bit too remote to anywhere, 3-hour drive to anywhere. And sometimes it's, you know, weather prevents it. But anyway, yeah, that's just how it was. Yeah, we're going to talk about today. We don't have a real podcast set up today. We just want to talk about some of the ideas and some of the things that we're both working on.
Right. We don't want the people to forget about us. So
right.
We better put something out there.
Right. And there's a lot going on. And if you ranch on federally administered lands, you need to be aware of a lot of the things that are coming your way, because this is not going to be good. one of the things that we're going to talk about in an upcoming episode fairly soon, if I can get it all lined out, is the new BLM regulations that have been put forth that give radical environmentalists equal footing and multiple use to have grazing allotments and to do things on forest land on equal footing with ranchers. And that is going to be devastating traditional multiple use.
Well, I think if I read it right, they're going to give conservation leases on BLM lands. Does it cover into national forests? Now, I expect it will eventually because they follow suit with each other, USDA and the Department of Interior. But right now, I think it's originally on BLM lands. Is that correct?
I think that's right. I think it'll start out with BLM lands and only affect BLM lands. But I think that eventually, as with every other regulation on BLM, it'll skip over to the Forest Service lands as well. And maybe sooner than we think, because of course, Interior, once they pass something like that, is going to push it through with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, who are taking over federally administered forest lands with their Fish and Wildlife Service programs as well. So I think we can expect just about anything to come from that. And we all need to participate in that. The House Natural Resources Committee pretty much flat out stated that it's a violation of the Taylor Grazing Act and perhaps even Public Rangeland Improvement Act. And I don't know how they're going to get away with it, but it looks like they're saying that this kind of regulation is okay because it's not a major federal action. Now, how they can come up with that, I don't know, but it's just an end run around protecting the original multiple use doctrine.
When I started reading it, trying to look it up now, but it seemed like it said that it will cause no economic hardships. Well, oh my gosh.
Well, you know,
I don't even know what to say because they lie.
Right. Every time we've heard that no economic hardships in the past, what has happened? Massive economic hardship.
The Wilderness Act says that the livestock will remain, yet there's barely any cattle left on the wilderness.
Right. Yeah. And that's just at the discretion of the agency. And this is going to be implemented at the discretion of the agencies as well. And it doesn't follow law. And it's very clear that the Interior Department, as it's being administered currently, don't really feel like they have to follow the law. Anyone can nominate an area for a conservation use, and that'll be casual use. It will be non-economic use. And that can't be good for our rural communities. We need our economic basis to remain intact.
Well, mostly they go after the water when they're thinking of conservation. They go after the water, and whomever controls the water controls the land around it. We've known that for hundreds of years.
Right. Well, hopefully we'll be able to dig into this a little bit more. You know, there's also something called the Wildlife Resolution Conservation Act, and that has come out of Martin Heinrich's office, our New Mexico senator. And everybody in New Mexico that works on federal lands is aware of Mr. Heinrich. His background is within environmental organizations. He's not really all that concerned about keeping people on the land and working. He's concerned about preservation and environmentalism, and that's just all there is to it. So I think that what he's going to pursue there is a revocation of grazing allotments and maybe a buyout of grazing allotments and things that are just going to put further pressure on ranching. So there's that one too, and we've got to work on that one. What's on your agenda, Carolyn? What have you got for us?
Well, when we talk about Heinrich, you know, of course I think of the Wild and Scenic River Act that he's pushing through. We know that there's a court case that says the federal government does not control the water. And so Heinrich, he's using different words and manipulating it. So without saying he controls the water, he says he controls the land around the water in the act, not him, but the federals will control the lands around the water. And that includes the tributaries. And so we know in the Southwest, water is gold. Whomever controls the water controls the land. By
Right.
controlling the land around the waters, he's controlling more than the so many feet that he's requesting in the act. Water is a state issue. I don't get why a senator from New Mexico would want the federal government to control our state waters by controlling the land. So, no, I don't have a lot of trust for him.
No, exactly. And U.S. versus New Mexico is pretty clear that the state of New Mexico allows the beneficial use of water to continue, and the priority of water use is in the hands of the ranchers, not the federal government, even if it's on federally administered lands. So this just appears to be one more way to bypass the legality of ranching and the ownership of the waters. And why, you're right, why would someone who is protecting the state of New Mexico undermine that kind of law? And not to mention the fact that it's a U.S. Supreme Court ruling they're trying to end run around. It's just beyond
It's
me
right,
how.
and it, or I'm sorry for interrupting, but
It's
it's
okay.
our New Mexico state constitution, and
Right.
it affects not only the ranchers, but it affects the farmers.
Right. So we've got the U.S. Supreme Court backing us. We've got the New Mexico Constitution, not to mention the U.S. Constitution. And yet some of these representatives are just so fired up to make a name for themselves in the environmental movement that they're willing to undermine all of that just to get their
Right.
way.
We talk about this. I've asked you before, do you want to hurt the owls or the deers or the snakes or the frogs? No, we are here and we actually do things on our own to protect the wildlife.
Right.
But we're characterized as evil and harmful to the environment.
Well, that's the
And
reason for this podcast, is so people can get to know ranching and get to know ranchers and get to know ranch grandmas and understand that we're not here to do what we're being accused of in mainstream discussions.
that's right. This bill that we're talking about, it says that it will not cause any economic harm. Well, I'm not sure I trust that bill. The Wilderness Act says that livestock will remain, and yet most ranching families have been pushed out of the wilderness, and it's been pushed deceitfully. They'll say the rancher went broke, but they don't put in their notes that goes to the public and to future lawmakers and to future Forest Service supervisors that they went broke because they were removed from the water.
Right.
So no, I don't trust
That's
this
an
bill at all.
that is just an excellent point. And when you don't have a voice and you can't discuss these things, then it makes it that much easier to be steamrolled over by a law that, on the surface of it, when you just gloss over the surface and say, "Oh, it's for conservation, everybody loves conservation," that it looks really, really good. But you dig down into those laws and you know what the history is and what the community is based off of, which is multiple use and which is ranching that has had centuries old rights on these land and timber, which was supposed to continue, and you know it's just going to break these communities further.
That's true. And like I said, we did ranch days last week, and we had hundreds of kids come through, and you can tell they enjoyed what they saw. And in their back of their minds, I wonder how many were saying, I want to be a farmer when I grow up. I want to be a rancher when I grow up.
Well, ranch
And it's
days and ag in the classroom and those kind of programs are some of the best things that we can do as an industry to educate people on what it's really like and get people thinking beyond the fad of environmentalism and anti-agriculture. It's just been a really good thing for everybody in the industry.
All right. So, well, like you said, that's why we're doing this podcast.
One of the things that I want to pull together and that I'm working on right now, a couple of weeks ago, there was a man in Oregon who was mauled and viciously bitten up by what he says was a northern gray wolf. And he's an outdoors guy, and he's hunted all his life, and he feels like he knows what was on top of him biting him. And yet when the DNA analysis came back, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service or Oregon Department of Wildlife Services or whichever administrative outfit it was said that it was a domestic dog. Well, from what I understand, genetically, canine is a canine is a canine genetically. And you can't just, there's not just a neon light that goes off that says this batch of DNA is wolf, this batch of DNA is dog. They have to analyze familial groups to see which dog is which dog and which wolf is which wolf. And I'm not really good at explaining it, so I'm going to try and talk to a gentleman I know that has been involved in canine genetics for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for many, many years. And I'm going to see if I can get him to upgrade my knowledge on this, because I believe I understand it, but I also have some problems. I do know from a layman's position that most of the coyotes in the northeastern part of the state are wolf hybrids. They do have wolf genetics in them, and most black wolves, actually all black wolves, have that black gene from a dog. It's dog DNA. So you can't just say, oh, gee, that was a domestic dog. Oh, gee, that was a northern gray wolf. Oh, gee, that was a Mexican wolf. Because the only reason they can differentiate Mexican wolves from anything else is because they all came from one female, which means they all carry the same familial line of mitochondrial DNA from that one female. So as complicated as this is, I want to try and do a podcast that explains it in terms we can all understand, so that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and all these organizations can't buffalo them into believing that they're experts on this, because it's a complicated issue. And I think they rely too heavily on what the general public understands of genetics.
I can't wait for that podcast. I'm probably going to sit quiet through most of that because I don't know much of any of that. Probably the only thing I can add to that is I'll look up what coil wolves are. And where they're at, how they're in the cities, and
right,
and how the coyotes have mixed with the wolves. And I believe our coyotes are bigger here than they were 20 years ago. So that's going to be a good podcast, Laura.
Well, it should be interesting. And we've talked about it at length for years and years here in Mexican wolf country about genetically this and genetically that. And a lot of people believe that these wolves are dog hybrids, but almost all wolves are dog hybrids, in my opinion. And almost all dogs have some sort of background of wolf DNA, just like all humans have the genome or the genetic relation to one woman in South Africa. I mean, genetics is an interesting thing, but we need to try and learn how to analyze it from a layman's point, because it's way over my head. I think I understand it. I know other people who think they understand it, but I really need it explained to me by someone who really digs it and really understands and has access to all of the databases on these animals so that they can explain it to you in a way that you understand.
That'll be a good podcast. I'm thinking back on, we use cur dogs, and cur dogs are usually from Louisiana in that area. And when I did a search on them years ago, because we changed to the type of dogs we used when we moved here, the cur dogs in the Google search says they have red wolf in them. So you're right in what you're saying. That'll be a fun podcast.
Well, that's one I haven't heard yet, but I wouldn't really be surprised. But that's another example. The red wolves in the southern part of the country that are reintroduced have a lot of coyote DNA. They have bred with coyotes over centuries now, and yet they're considered a subspecies of gray wolf. So why aren't they considered a subspecies of coyote and listed as a coyote, or would they not be able to list them if they were just a coyote hybrid? It just depends.
The way that the group works, if they are a subspecies of coyotes, then the group would say we need to protect all coyotes.
Right.
It's not about what's best for the land. It's about how do we remove the ranchers who basically have the water rights out there on federal land.
And not just ranchers. Just about anybody can be manipulated – via use of the Endangered Species Act right out of business. So let me read this to you. This is interesting. This concept of the subspecies is fallacious. The better the geographic variation of a species is known, the more difficult it becomes to delimit subspecies, and the more obvious it becomes that many such delimitations are quite arbitrary. So I think that's the problem, what we are seeing across the board in the Endangered Species Act. Subspecies can be used to fill historic habitat. And historic habitat is another one of those things in the Endangered Species Act that gives them such wide leeway to do whatever they want, wherever they want.
Where are you reading from when you quote that?
I'm actually reading from a book I'm published in called The Real Wolf, The Science, Politics, Economics of Coexisting with Wolves in Modern Times. I'm going to read to you all the authors in this so you'll know what we're talking about.
Did you say a book that you're publishing, or did you mean a book that you're reading? Are you writing a book?
Well, I'm always writing a book, but I'm never finishing a book because that's just kind of... But I am in this book. I do have a chapter. Our friend Jess Carey has a chapter in it. If you've never read this book and you're involved in the Mexican Wolf Program in any way, especially if you're a layperson who runs cattle, you need to read this book.
Tell me the name of it again.
The Real Wolf, Ted B. Okay. Lyon with Will Graves. And Will Graves is just an excellent author and scientist. The contributions in it are Rob Arnaud, Dr. Arthur Bergand, Karen Bud Fallon, Jess Carey, Dr. Matthew A. Cronin, Dr. Valerius Geist, Don Pei, Laura Sneberger, that's me, Heather Smith Thomas, and Kat Erbickett. And y'all know Kat on Facebook. She's the one with the big dogs in Wyoming, and she's the writer.
How'd you get on there? You're not a doctor.
Well, they didn't want just doctors. They've got three or four doctors on there. Three or four people with doctorates and expertise. And the geneticist I want to talk to is one of the authors. So
okay. Well, that'll be a good podcast. So
it seems like it'll be a lot of fun. And it was something I was really into about 10 years ago before they did the rule change. And we just absolutely got flattened again. I go to reading the things that I wrote 10 years ago. And I think to myself, who is that person? I don't remember being that smart, but I guess that's just
how
it is.
Well, I can call you Dr. Laura.
No, that's okay.
Oh, wait, there already is a Dr.
There
Laura.
There already is a Dr. Laura. Yeah, that's okay. I'll never be a doctorate, never, ever. But I do admire a lot of these people who have written in this book that have so much expertise and work so hard.
Okay, so. The Real Wolf. I'll look for that.
So one of the other things that we need to pay close attention to is the SunZia project, which is a project that is taking over BLM land for solar panels and wind generators. And I guess just from the meeting that we attended the other night on conference call, it's going to be really rough on ranchers along the I-10 corridor. I don't know how they're going to fare with it, but we need to watch that carefully just to supply California with a lot of the supposedly renewable energy that everybody wants now. They're going to take out a lot of actual land that is habitat for wildlife and create such good cow country. And just so they can run air conditioners and not have so many rolling blackouts in California, which seems a little bit, you know, one-sided to me. One of the things that I think is pretty important with all of these issues coming down the pike that seem way more serious now than at any time in the past is the fact that our industry representation is fractured and fragmented. And one of the things that was brought to our attention when we were on the Federal Lands Council call the other night is ranchers in southern New Mexico don't feel represented right now. And why we don't feel represented is just, you know, over my head. I have not really involved myself in a whole lot in the last 10 years. So I'm kind of not sure what the political ramifications have gone on in say the state industry groups. But I do know that if you're going to be ranching in New Mexico and you're on any kind of federal grazing allotment, you really have to start educating yourself and you really have to start being active. So pick somewhere, pull it together, help your neighboring organization, and start working on these things. educate yourselves a little bit. Read the Public Rangeland Improvement Act, read the Taylor Grazing Act, read FLIPMA, and start talking to people who are working through the Federal Register and working on these issues that are being put in front of us that should have already been covered in law. And maybe we can help facilitate some of that through this podcast. I know that the Arizona-New Mexico Coalition of Counties with Howard, he is an excellent resource for what's coming down the pike, and he will help you understand what's in the Federal Register, what kind of regulations are coming up, and he'll help you get comments done on them. And then we're going to have to do some fundraising. We need to be in court clearly again.
That's the thing, is we keep losing. And so I'm leery about why can't these, I don't know, why aren't we winning? That's what I don't know. The laws are there. We need to get with organizations, but we also go to the basics, 101. Ranchers have rights.
I agree
Look
with you.
Look at the basics.
I agree with you. I don't know sure why we're not
your
winning.
Lawyers, say that again.
I don't know why we're not winning. The laws are pretty dang clear. Now, maybe they're a little nebulous in the laws, but there is case law to back them, and why we can't go into court with some of this stuff thoroughly researched and thoroughly argued. And we haven't been able to do
arguing,
that for a long time.
We keep arguing regulations instead of going back to the laws.
Exactly. And that's exactly what that Montana congressman was telling the Interior Secretary the other day. Regulations do not usurp the law that Congress has put forth. And that's how I feel about it, too, when we go into court. We can't just keep using regulations to defend us. I don't know. I'm not the expert. You and I aren't the experts, but we are trying, and we do try and read, and I just encourage everybody out there to get together in an organization and pull your organizations together. Support each other and educate each other.
It'll depend on you knowing the facts on each person, knowing some facts to kind of help lead in the right, correct direction.
Right. No, I agree.
So I want to read, I started out by reading what I wrote on Facebook this morning. You can find it, like I said, on Ranchers Have Rights on Facebook. And here's what I said. So now that my granddaughter she's on the road to recovery. So I said, so now I can somewhat focus. There's a bill proposed that I want to read. They say it'll remove grazing from lands mismanaged, that's my opinion, by Department of Interior through regulations and proclamations. Hold your horses. Wait all. Remember, when Roosevelt kicked the Thule Indians off their reservations because he declared their tribal lands part of national forests, it didn't work. The Indians had been granted through law lands. They had been given the reservations to live on. And this is what we need to remember. Statutes override proclamations. I didn't write this part, but I'll say it. Our national forests were created by proclamations. The laws that said we could graze, that we could occupy, were made by laws, like I just said. And the case, it was in about 1911, 1910. I would have to look it up. But the Thule Indians went back to the reservation because proclamation by president does not override statutes. So I said, guess what? Through statutes, have been guaranteed protection of the livestock industry through our grazing fees. Check out the Public Rangeland Improvement Act. For over 100 years, ranchers have been paying for protection. Now to find lawyers who will win by defending statutes that said homesteaders have rights to open land for grazing. You would think the U.S. government would defend us, but that's a big fat hole. Protect my granddaughter, Lord, and restore our lands.
Yeah, amen to that.
I think that sums up what we're talking about.
Yeah.
We're not having lawyers using the statutes.
Let me tell you, we sent that new BLM regs off to a list of people that we thought needed to read it and get involved. And the only one that I know for sure read it was a lawyer. And his opinion was, and I quote, "This is just gnarly." So, you know, it's good to have some people responding in a way that, you know, makes it feel like, you know, we can fight this and there are openings to deal with this kind of thing. But let's try and pull it together, folks. Let's try and get together and let's try and let our bygones be bygones. And let's try and look outside the box and work these issues from other angles and help each other to do so.
Yeah. And on a positive note with that, someone was talking to me. He just came from Montana. They have grazing districts up there more than we have on our national forest. I don't think we have grazing districts.
We used to.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, we used to. The Taylor Grazing Act allowed us to have grazing districts that advise the agencies.
But Taylor Grazing Act is on, well, I don't know. Taylor Grazing Act, did that cover over to national forest?
I think so.
Taylor Grazing Act was public lands on Department of Interior.
That's SPLTMA.
I think if you look, the Taylor Grazing Act is on public lands. Otherwise, we would be able to sell our allotments by selling our fences, which is how BLM sells their allotments. Like their deeded land is tied to the allotment, and that's in the Taylor Grazing Act, whereas our deeded land isn't specifically tied. Yeah, you need to look at that, Laura. Taylor Grazing Act is public lands. And
okay.
That's why I think we keep losing, is because they argue off the Taylor Grazing Land and our rights come from before that.
Okay, well, let me rehash and reread and re-educate myself, because like I say, 10 years ago, I was a whole lot smarter than I am now. And I don't remember a whole lot. So I do need to review. And I think a lot of us need to review. And that's kind of what I'm saying is we all need to sit down and figure out what we do have and then go from there. So
I think on my ranchershaverights.com, on one of the pages, I think it's the grazing permit, I have a newspaper article about the Taylor Grazing Act being on public land. So please, people, I put together this Ranchers Have Rights. I put it together so I can share it with my grandkids. But everyone, it's for everyone who's on these federal lands.
Are you writing a book, Carolyn?
I don't know if it'll ever be published to the public, but I am putting stuff together so my grandkids can be protected.
Okay, good deal.
I am going to have to go to work today in about 20 minutes, so we better
I need to go take some dogs and get them exercised, because it was the weekend and we have too many people up on the weekend, and I need to get them out and get a run in, and then I'll start working on editing this little podcast. So you guys,
Laura, you've been the one who's held this together, and I enjoy this. I hope people share it and it gets out there.
Well, let me also say that sometimes we're going to fall off the edge of the earth, because we do have a lot going on. We have grandkids, we have wolves, we have cattle, we have jobs, we have immediate family that needs taken care of. And there are going to be things that happen, like what happened with Carolyn this week. And we're going to fall off the edge of the earth and miss an episode once in a while. And we sure are grateful that all of you guys are still trying to listen and trying to support us, because we've just started this little enterprise and we are going to need that support to keep it growing. And it has been growing very slowly and very steadily, but I think we're getting somewhere with it. I think it's just a whole lot easier for people to plug headphones into their ears and go pack salt than it is to sit down there and try and read an article or read emails. So if we can keep covering things, and if anybody wants to be on this podcast and talk about their issue, we welcome that. So bring it. Thank you all for listening, and join us on our next podcast. I'm not sure which one it's going to be, but we'll be working on at least two at a time from here on out, and we will get it together hopefully soon.
See you on down the road, and remember, ranchers have rights.